You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
When Linda and I were first married, our typical vacations were one of two things. It either meant that we were backpacking high up in the mountains or we were camping. And this was for two particular reasons. We loved exploring, and still to this day love to explore, the Sierra Nevada mountains and all that they have to offer. And second, backpacking and camping was much more affordable than the other options might be, especially when you're living on the income of two graduate students. Even when we took a road trip, at least half of the nights were always spent at campgrounds, and motels were only there to fill the bill as a last resort. Now, the beauty of these kinds of trips, especially at that point in history, is that this was still a time when you could really get away from it all. There were no GPS systems available to mere mortals. Cell phones were somebody's far-fetched fantasy. And as long as we had our AAA road map or a topographical map and a compass, we were just fine. So there were actually times when family and friends and work did not hear from us, and we could not hear from them for a whole 2 weeks. Imagine that. Imagine that. Well, fast forward 36 years, and we know it's much different now. You can be reached almost anywhere. Pictures can be taken and shared instantly around the world. Families get concerned if they haven't heard from you, God forbid, in at least 48 hours. And work never seems to be more than an email or a text away. Let's face it, getting disconnected in the time in which we live is almost impossible. It can really feel, it's hard to feel like you ever really can take a vacation. Now, I know our theme for this passage, for these several weeks, is God never goes on vacation, and I'm glad that God never goes on vacation, but I'm also extremely, extremely clear that I am not God. Fatherhood certainly confirmed that long ago, and I wistfully imagine the possibility of getting away truly off the grid, as we might say. Sometimes this desire is to get away for rest, for rejuvenation and recentering. Other times the desire may be to escape the madness that can be everyday life. In fact, an article I read earlier this week indicated that a full 78% of U.S. residents were ready for the presidential election season to be over now. And it was the same regardless of what candidate was supported. We've apparently, friends, had enough. I imagine we all have those long lists of things with which we have had enough. Is it the difficulties at work? Perhaps it's the relationships that are so strained, you wonder if they might ever be repairable. Perhaps it's estrangement from family members, or the making amends for something we did wrong that never seems to be enough, no matter how hard you try. What might the things be, friends, that are swirling around in our lives right now? In fact, let's just pause for a moment and to think about what those things might be that are swirling around for us. Perhaps you want to jot them down. Let's think quietly for a moment. Then there are all the things over which it seems we have no control. The economic inequalities which never disappear, the famines which force parents to decide which child to feed and which to send to bed hungry. We become numb to the violence in our own backyards and by extension the never-ending machine of warfare which we try to ignore unless we have a loved one or friend directly impacted by what seems to be our inability to ever get along. And let's not even talk about religion, friends. If you are like me, haven't you at least one time thought maybe we are better off without religion given our checkered history? Ours is not a story that is confined to modern times and sensibilities. I imagine the widow of which we heard, the widow of Zarephath, was also at wit's end. You see, anytime we see the word widow in our sacred texts, we should immediately imagine that it's a word that is flashing in bold print. The authors of the biblical text inserted this particular adjective because it had so much to say. To be a widow, more often than not, meant you were disenfranchised. It meant that your security to the future was cut off, and the reality for most widows was abject poverty. And that seemed to be the case for this particular widow. This is the woman with which the prophet Elijah had an encounter. Now, to remind ourselves a little bit about Elijah, he was a prophet that was associated with the northern kingdom of Israel. And to refresh our minds, during the time of King Saul and King David and King Solomon, there was only one kingdom of Israel. Following these three rulers, Israel was broken into two kingdoms. The north continued to be referred to as Israel, and it claimed the city of Samaria as the focus of its worship. And the south was called Judah, and that continued to hold on to the city of Jerusalem as the focus of its political and religious goings on. Now, during the time of Elijah, Ahab was the king of Judah, or I should say of Israel, who happened to be married to the priestess of Baal, Jezebel. Maybe a name that you've heard before. The prophets of the northern kingdom were very, very consistent in their critique of Israel, the northern kingdom, and the propensity of that kingdom to get involved in what we would probably call intermarriage, but especially the worship of gods other than the God called Yahweh, the God of Abraham and the God of all of Abraham and Sarah's ancestors. Elijah was a prophet and a wonder worker that was associated with the northern kingdom. In fact, the meaning of the word Elisha is, "My God is Yahweh." See, Elijah's name is the meaning for what he did, presenting his God, Yahweh. Now, the other thing identified with Elijah is that he was a Tishbite. Well, why is that important, the fact that he came from Tishbe? Well, this was a place far away from the center of things going on in the northern kingdom, on the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And Tishbite, if you look at that word, can be translated as stranger. So it meant that Elijah was a stranger among those who were the strangers, the other Tishbites, because they were far away from the seat of power. Now, the one thing we know about all of the prophets is that they were unabashedly critical in their assessment both of what was going on in Judah and what was going on in the northern kingdom of Israel. And their prophecies were more of those of doom and gloom than they were hope and restoration. But we've got this interesting text this morning that is not about Elijah the critic. Instead, it is about Elijah, the wonder worker, the bringer of hope into people's lives. And that's a rather odd story when it comes to the ancient prophets. And the storyteller starts the tale by saying it was another typical day for Elijah, his appearance before King Ahab, telling him that there will be no rain or dew for that matter until the word is given. We assume the word given by Elisha. And I'm sure that really contributed toward making him a real favorite advisor to Ahab, saying doom and gloom was coming. And then, as we read more into this story, we are told that there was somewhat of a testy dialogue going on between Elijah and God, and then they comes across this woman gathering sticks, and he asks her to bring him some water. That's the widow. He asks her to bring him some water. You know, it's interesting that it's never said in the story why he couldn't get water for himself. Typical, right? Well, the widow was annoyed, and probably rightly so, especially when he said, "How about if he also bring me some bread as well?" Well, we don't know how long she had been a widow, but we do know that she had a young son. And she was probably living at the edges. And here now was another man telling her what to do. Telling her what to do and not offering any kind of help whatsoever. While the storyteller is not explicit, I bet she lost it at this point. Wouldn't you agree? Her response was great. You have to love the sarcasm that's really inherent in this. As the Lord your God lives, I have nothing baked, only a handful of meal in a jar and a little oil in a jug. I am now gathering a couple of sticks so that I may go home and prepare it for myself and my son so that we may eat it and die. So there, Elijah. She was telling the prophet that they were at wit's end. The little she had left was only going to be enough to stop the hunger pangs. And that was it. As far as she was concerned, there was no future. There was only death. Well, of course, we know that Elijah worked a miracle because the container with the meal and with the oil never emptied. And that's a story we hear of often in Scripture about how containers keep getting filled. But all of this really was secondary to the point of the story, the real point of the story, and that was the death of the child of the widow. The boy became ill, as we remember hearing in the text. And as we might imagine, the widow was absolutely distraught. Think of it this way. There were several things at work in this story. First of all, the situation was bad enough for the woman, the very fact that she was a widow. But now to lose her son, upon whom she was going to be dependent for any kind of future, well, that was too much. Then we also have this strange thing going on in the story where the widow assumes that her son's death was because of her past sin. Remember, she says to Elijah, "Why did you bring this past sin of mine back to me?" And then what complicates the story even further is Elijah then seems to be annoyed with God's questions and wonders why God had killed her son. That was the statement from Elijah, that God had killed the widow's son. And when you look at all of this, this is some pretty difficult stuff to consider if we were left there at that point. But instead, as so often is the case in these tales, we have what seems to be a little bit of a happy ending with the son being brought back to life and the woman affirming that Elijah indeed was a man of God. So this is pretty complicated, and I look at it and I ask myself the question, what is it I am supposed to take from this? What are we supposed to take from a text like this? Well, there's certainly a number of reminders here that our ancient counterparts, the people in these stories, viewed God much differently than our modern sensibilities would suggest. You see, this particular story, even though it's got some details that might make us cringe, the story is really about the larger picture. You see, it goes back to the reality that we were talking about a story that took place in the midst of the northern kingdom. And these were people who were considered unfaithful to God. And they had prophet after prophet bearing witness to the fact that they were an unfaithful bunch. So logic might suggest that God should have given up on these people long ago and have nothing whatsoever to do with the people of Israel. But instead, the writer tells us that God showed fidelity to the people of Israel and fidelity to all of the ancient covenant. And it didn't matter whether they were from the northern or the southern kingdom. As we've seen in other stories, God would be with those who were not even a part of the children, the chosen people. We've seen that play out before. So you see, rather than taking a story like this and getting bogged down in the details, which it's really not about, it's about the bigger picture of God yearning to be in relationship with all of the people. That's the message that we can really grab a hold of today. in the time and place in which we live, God yearns to be in relationship with all of us. And we have the promise, like the widow, that God meets us wherever we are. Sometimes we're really prepared to meet God. Other times God is an intrusion in our lives. Other times we're not even sure what to think about God. But the story teaches us that God meets us wherever we are. And that, friends, I think is strength that we can find for each of us in this story of the widow and the encounter with Elijah. That in the midst of all of the things that might be swirling in our lives, all the disappointments, all the missed opportunities, all of the frustrations, God is still there. God is yearning to be in relationship with us, meeting us wherever we are. If that's not good news, I don't know what is. Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.